for people who are Catholic today, they may just associate bells with church services, but in the mission context, they served more of a daily life control purpose.
For me, the bells signify a period where new meaning, new values, and new ways of life were imposed on the landscape here in California.
Basically, these were instruments of control.
That same spirit of surveillance is being extended by the sound of the bells themselves. So even if the friars aren't looking at you, the bell carries their message and their potential threat of violence or discipline if you aren't sort of following the rules.
Welcome to Challenging Colonialism, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of Indigenous California. An important note from the start, the producers are two white male educator academics, and these are not our stories. This podcast will center Native voices, and our intention is to highlight the significant work being done by Indigenous communities to challenge ongoing colonialism, and to broadcast information about the resistance and resilience of Indigenous California in the past, the present, and the future. A final note before we begin, this podcast may contain graphic descriptions of slavery, genocide, and sexual violence. Welcome to Episode 1, Instruments of Colonization.
My name is Bernard Gordillo, and I am a musicologist. I research the history of music and sound in Latin America and its relations with the United States. I'm particularly interested in the nature and function of church bells in the California missions, both over the course of their history and present-day relevance to the California Indians. The El Camino Real bell marker was a symbol that came out of a wave of revival movements in California during the last decades of the 19th century. These movements contributed to defining state identity and culture while they sought to attract tourism and settlement. A preservationist organization called the El Camino Real Association of California appropriated the mission bell as its emblem. In working towards reviving and reconstructing the path of the Spanish colonial roads that once connected the missions, themselves having co-opted native trading routes, the bell markers were used as landmarks to guide motorists on a very modern and non-religious pilgrimage across the state.
My name is Valentin Lopez, and I'm the chairman of the Amamutsun Tribal Band.
Well, they wanted to bring more tourism to California, and they wanted to bring more tourism to the missions. And they think that that right there is honoring this wonderful historical period. And it brings back these feelings of nostalgia. But when we see it, those signs represent to us the domination of those missions, the way they dominated our people, the way they separated our families, the way they destroyed our cultures and our spirituality, the way they would go out and forcefully capture the people and march them to the missions.
My name is Eve Chavez. I am Tongva from the Los Angeles Basin, and I am an assistant professor in the History of Art and Visual Culture Department at UC Santa Cruz. I should acknowledge that growing up in California, I had a different view of them than I do now as a trained academic. I think I just kind of took them for granted as, well, this is part of California. It's part of the California landscape that we see El Camino Real bells throughout the state. You're driving up the highway, you see them. It's like, okay, well, this is just a California thing. And they're somehow tied to the missions. But I didn't learn until later that actually those bells are not from the mission era. They're just meant to evoke the mission era, but really were put in place in the early 20th century by Anglo-American mission boosters who wanted to promote tourism to the missions. So that's another complicated layer to this whole history of the missions and the Spanish fantasy heritage that has shaped California's landscape. And when I see these bells today, I think, wow, the Spanish really left a legacy that later settler colonists, for lack of a better word, embraced, and in the process continue to erase an indigenous presence. If someone wanted to make an argument that these were part of the mission history, then that's not accurate. These are anachronistic emblems of what Anglo-American settlers thought California stood for.
My name is Grzegorz Welizarowicz, and I teach at the American Studies at the Institute of English and American Studies at the University of Gdańsk, which is in Poland. Also, the way I see this, the El Camino Real bells, I see this as part of this larger movement towards invented tradition. So I see this in California, especially in the context of the arrival of new settlers, new residents to California, and the desire to create a kind of a sense of history. The other thing, of course, was the booster's goal, which was to boost the value of the land. You imbue the land with that historical value, with you imbue with something, and you with the values like romantic values, you know, the values associated with the missions that are produced at the close of the 19th century. Of course, everything is idealized. The missions were the paradise, where Indians happily worked with their fathers, quote unquote, which is the mission padres. So this is a kind of an image of an idyllic past, now gone, but we are claiming this past as our own lineage. Add to this also the automobile clubs and the Native Daughters of the Golden West and the Native Sons of the Golden West, all kinds of organizations that are investing in this, what we now understand as a fabricated version of history.
I don't think many people realize that. They just think, oh, well, that's what California is. They don't recognize that there were people here before Spanish settlers, or colonists rather, arrived. So that's troubling, I would say. Yes, it's part of an aspect of California's heritage, but it is damaging to the indigenous communities.
The bell markers became symbols of civic pride for California. The hundreds of bell markers present today continue to promote this pride in state heritage. The question is, whose heritage does it belong to?
We've begun with some historical context of the El Camino Real bell markers. Who put them on the highways and why they're there? You heard from Eve Chavez, Alexi Sigona, Annie Danis, Bernard Gordillo, Valentin Lopez, and Gregor Velasarvitz. In the next segment, we'll hear about the significance of the actual mission bells historically during the Spanish conquest and the colonial occupation of California, the purpose of the bells in relation to controlling native Californian people, and why they are extremely problematic reminders of California's colonial past. You'll hear more from Annie Danis, Bernard Gordillo, and Gregor Velasarvitz.
So my name's Annie Danis, and I'm an interdisciplinary researcher and a lecturer at UC Berkeley and Stanford University here in California. Archaeologists are big fans of things you can map. So the spatial relationship between things, objects, how things are left behind is really important to building an understanding of experience in the past, of power, of relationships. But sometimes this leaves out an important element of human experience. So a spatial sonic model of Franciscan mission combines an understanding of how things like buildings and hills and walls organize a person's experience in the past. That's the spatial part. And what the space sounded like, that's the sonic part. So you have the mission quadrangle, which is the church, the convento, the residential buildings, and that's the architectural space of the mission itself, which is where most research up until now has focused. And that architecture was part of this project of control, because you bring people inside some walls, you're penning them in, you're making a statement. So a Native Californian person might have felt contained by the walls around a mission quadrangle, around the church and the sort of domestic buildings of the main part of the mission. But they might also have felt some sense of mission control, like even if they were outside of those walls, solely because they could hear the activities of the mission.
Mission bells imposed European time and order over native lands across Alta California. They were a fundamental tool of Spanish colonialism and Christianization on the American continent. The Franciscans used bells to regiment life in the missions. The bells were integral mediums employed in the Christian conversion of native peoples.
So for friars and believers, the bell marks times of worship, and it, in sort of Catholic doctrine at the time, has a material relationship to divinity. So the sound of the bell itself makes a connection between the listener and God. So there's a very sacred aspect to the sound of the bells that has very meaningful symbolism within Catholicism at the time, especially. But they're also used to mark time. So those times of worship become also times of breaking up the day and organizing your labor and what you do. And so these bells sort of become ways to call native laborers back from the field, for example. So we have one account of Native Californians from Mission Dolores in San Francisco being sent out to the Presidio, which is miles away, to work, and being called back by the bells. So in the sort of rural landscape of Mission era California, those bells reach huge areas sometimes, depending on hills and topography. So they become not just this sort of sacred sound, but they're also really important in influencing a change in the temporal rhythms of Native Californians.
So when Serra peals that bell, he drowns out all of the other environmental sounds. This becomes the dominant sound, right? So bells are part of this performative apparatus, which is prescribed as an instrument of awe, inspiring awe, right? Inspiring interest among the Indians, among the indigenous people of the Americas. Once at the mission, the bell becomes an instrument of conditioning. Because the bell wakes you up, the bell brings you to a morning mass, breakfast, dinner, supper. It regulates every aspect of your life. It intervenes into those environments which had never heard that sound before and destroy what you had known before. So what did it mean to ring that bell and, you know, shoot that cannon? You know, I bet some of these sounds would be haunting the people who heard them for the rest of their lives.
You're listening to Challenging Colonialism, a podcast focused on disrupting the colonial narratives too commonly repeated and accepted in California's history. Please look for our next episode, where you'll hear Indigenous voices speaking about shell mounds, some of the most numerous archaeological sites, sacred sites, in California and especially in the Bay Area, which is the unceded territory of a variety of tribal bands together referred to today as Ohlone people. As we close our first episode, we'll highlight the campaign to remove the mission bells as pseudo-historical symbols celebrating genocide. You'll hear the voices of Julissa Lopez, Valentin Lopez, Will Parrish, and Alexi Sagona. In 2019, a replica bell was taken down on the UC Santa Cruz campus after tribal leaders campaigned for its removal. You can see video of the removal and several of the speakers, including Julissa Lopez and Valentin Lopez, with a simple internet search. Later, another bell was removed from Santa Cruz Mission itself, as protesters connected the legacies of colonialism to the legacies of anti-Black racism and present-day police violence. This direct action removal took place in the spring of 2020, as protests erupted after the deaths of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd, among others. We encourage you to learn more about the effort to remove these bells, not as an effort to erase history, but to correct it, as these bells are just early 1900s replicas meant to boost tourism and not historical markers in any way. In some ways, they are the California equivalent of statues honoring the Confederacy. As we record this, in July 2021, another bell removal is planned for August.
So my name is Julissa Lopez. I'm a member of the Amamutsin Tribal Band, and I'm also Mexican American, and I'm currently a grad student at the University of Michigan. I'm getting my PhD in social psychology. I mean, so I was a undergraduate at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and I didn't really notice them growing up on the highways until I got older and I started driving myself. And then I started seeing them, and then I finally saw one like up close and personal on campus. I would walk by it like pretty often because it was on my route to my job. I knew it, like there was intention behind it too, that it was supposed to be reminding us of the mission period. But I think what it brings up for people is different depending on, you know, who the audience is. So for me as a Native person, it was a reminder of like colonization of, okay, this is a symbol of like the intergenerational trauma that I see every day in my life. And I was also doing a lot of growing in my own identity during undergrad. So then having that to confront as I'm on my way to the American Indian Resource Center where I worked, I was just like constantly unpacking my own identity and my people's history. So that was just kind of like another trigger, I guess you can think of it that way. It would just be like, okay, now I have to reconfront this history again. Because it's not only like a symbol of the times, but it's also a symbol of like what our society values. And, you know, money went into these to recreate them, to use them. Like they weren't left by the Spaniards. Like California as a state put money into it to create these. And not only that, but when they like were damaged and like ruined early on, like they kept putting in money to restore them or to bring them back and to kind of develop. Like I was doing research, Caltrans got $2 million in grants recently, like within the 2000s to restore them. That's a lot of money that they're putting towards this, you know, as an effort to like keep these going just for symbolism, for tourism. What if that $2 million was invested somewhere else?
We started an effort to remove those bells. We found a little acceptance in at the UC Santa Cruz campus. I don't know what the heck there was a mission bell on the campus of UC Santa Cruz for. And so we went up and we talked to the people at UC Santa Cruz about having that bell removed. And after we talked about the history and what it represented to Native American people, they agreed to remove that bell. And so we worked with the vice chancellor there to have that bell removed. And the bell was removed in 2019.
We just took it upon ourselves. Like we were like, we don't like this. So we're going to try to do something about it. We were in a position to like be in conversation with administrators that actually could make a difference. So then we made a petition and we were collecting signatures. We had connections in different like organizations on campus and also like other students and resource centers.
And so taking that bell down was just a sign that says,
You're not going to do that anymore. Our ancestors were important. That mission history is not true. You know, and there was a lot of other messages that went with that. You know, on that day that Bell was removed, a lot of speakers said a lot of powerful things. And that is, you know, and it's time for that history to change.
Just being able to see it physically be taken down, I think, was just healing in itself. To be there with like elders, my cousins, it does feel like a domino effect. It feels like, okay, we can make this, we can remove this bell. Okay, what about the next bell?
My name is Will Paris. I am a journalist, community organizer, and PhD student in history of consciousness at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And I was in attendance during two different bell removals that have happened in Santa Cruz. You know, there was a really nice ceremony and gathering that was sanctioned by the university, you know, as a product of a lot of organizing and relationship building between the Alma Mutz and tribal bands and its supporters and, you know, UCSC administrators. After a ceremony that involved speeches and prayer and dancing, some maintenance workers at UC Santa Cruz actually got out some tools and removed one of the mission bells that had stood at UC Santa Cruz for a number of years. I do think the idea definitely contributed to what happened with the removal of the second bell. What I witnessed there, basically, that you know, during the time of the George Floyd uprisings in, you know, late spring, early summer last year, there was a moment where a lot of statues were being taken down, representing the racist colonial histories of the United States, were being removed during direct actions, you know, where basically people took it into their own hands to remove things like, you know, statues of Father Junipero Serra or Confederate monuments in different parts of the Jim Crow South. And so, you know, it was during that time that some people had gathered for a march and a rally that went to the mission in Santa Cruz, and you know, different people spoke there. I'm one of the people who actually spoke during the rally and just shared, like, you know, based on my research, you know, some history. And then, you know, after that, some people took down a bell, and was not, like, physically proximate to it enough to see what happened there, but I do know that a bell came down. This was during a time when these sorts of things were happening all over the country and different parts of the world. And so I think that there are some people in Santa Cruz made a connection between, you know, this mission bell and the specific histories of genocide, slavery, and, you know, incarceration of indigenous people, and decided to take action. Yeah, that's my understanding. So, so I think that people recognize the symbolism of bell removal now because of what's happened. And so, yeah, I do think it creates momentum potentially to get rid of all of them. I'm not sure exactly what it would look like, but I think that now it is an open question, something people are focusing on more. And so that gives me a lot of hope that there will be many more bell removals, and hopefully all of them will come down sooner than later.
Mishmin Truhis, Kanraka Alexi Sagona. My name is Alexi, and I'm a member of the Amamutsun Tribal Band, and I'm also one of the leaders of the Amamutsun Youth Group for young adult tribal members. Hopefully, removing bells one by one can get people to question the other bells that they're seeing and help undermine this false history and false narrative. By removing bells and by removing all of these legacies of the mission system, there's new opportunities for indigenous peoples and indigenous values to be reinscribed onto the landscapes. So imagine hearing the same sets of things day in and day out for generations here in this landscape, and then it being drowned out by these bells. Perhaps instead of hearing bells, we'll hear the sounds of mountain lions, because we're restoring the ecosystem.
Thank you for listening to our first episode. Challenging Colonialism is produced by myself, Martin Rizzo Martinez, a historian, and Daniel Stoneblum, a public school administrator. We want to be both accountable and transparent about what our role is and what it is not, It is not our intention to further colonize the narrative or to misrepresent stories that aren't our own. Our own perspectives are unimportant, but we'd like to hear yours. Please leave your feedback, suggestions, reviews, ideas for future episodes, and more at the episode page. And please share and promote the podcast in your networks. The title of today's episode comes from the work of Zsegor Welyarovics, who used the term instruments of colonization in his piece, California Mission Bells, Listening Against the Fantasy Heritage, published in 2016 in Beyond Philology. Interviews were recorded by Martin Rizzo Martinez and Alexi Sigona. Music in this episode was created by Bernard Gordillo and Hilson Parker.